I would never have guessed in my whole life that at the age of 50 I will have to reach back to memories of my life, the recollection of the tragic, unclear, entangled events. I believe it is my duty to tell what I know, what I understand, and how I saw those events happening. When I now recall this trip, I realize I had no idea we were facing a planet-scale event, an event that presumably will go down in history, similar to the Great Volcano eruptions, the Pompeii destruction, or something of the kind. We turned onto a road that led to the town of Pripyat. Pripyat was a town of energy workers, the people who built and operated the Chernobyl nuclear power plant. A bit later I will tell you about the plant, how it was built and used, not to distract you from the course of events. In Pripyat, we could feel the anxiety. We drove to the town party committee building at the central town square. A decent hotel was right there, and it was there that the local officials met us. Majorets was already there. He arrived there before the state committee did. A group of specialists who first responded to the distress signal was also there. To our surprise, or at least to my surprise, the state committee did not receive an exact report on what happened at the plant or in the town. We only learned that something happened at the reactor number 4 at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant, while the performance of the turbine type alternator within the reactor number 4 was tested off duty in a coasting mode. During that experiment, two sequential explosions destroyed the reactor room building. A noticeable number of staff were injured. We did not have exact numbers, but hundreds of people got radiation injuries. Two people were also reported dead. The others were in the town hospitals, and the radiation levels at the reactor number 4 were grim. The radiation levels in Pripyat were above the norms, but did not pose a significant threat of radiation injury to the inhabitants of Pripyat. The state committee meeting was at once organized by Boris Yevdokimovich Rubina, who led the meeting with his conventional eagerness. The committee divided into groups, with each group having to solve its own task. The first group was led by Alexander Grigorievich Mieshkov, who was also part of the state committee. They had to determine the reasons behind the emergency. The second group, led by Comrade Abajan, had to organize and run the symmetry next to the station and in the town of Pripyat and surroundings, as well as gather civilian protection teams. It was then that Colonel Ivanov arrived. He led the civilian protection service in the region. They had to prepare for the possible citizen evacuation and first stage decontamination. Colonel Birdov, the head of the Internal Affairs Ministry of Ukraine, was to regulate who might be present within the danger zone. I led the group which had to come up with measures to contain the emergency. A group led by Yevgeny Ivanovich Vorobiev was tasked with helping the injured in running the medical service. Even before we arrived at Pripyat, 80 kilometers away from the town, we were surprised to see the sky. The sky was purple, with a crimson glow above the power plant, which made it look unlike any other nuclear plant. Nuclear power plants are well known for being clean and tidy, with their constructions and pipelines kept visibly neat. A specialist would recognize a nuclear power plant by not seeing any exhaust. It's a hallmark for nuclear power plants, not to mention specific design features. And what we saw looked like an ironworks or a large chemical plant with a crimson glow covering half of the sky. This was alarming and unusual. Immediately, we realized that the Nuclear Power Plant Administration and the Ministry of Energy officials, whoever was present there, were inconsistent in their actions. On one hand, most staff, the plant administration, the on-site ministry officials, were ready to act boldly. For example, the operators of reactors number 1 and number 2 were on station. Even the operators of reactor number 3, which was located in the same building with reactor number 4, were on station. All services were on the line. We could find any person and give any orders. What orders, though, should one give? And how should one assess the situation before the state committee arrives? The committee arrived at 8:20 p.m. on the 26th. At that point, there was no clear and informed plan of actions. The state committee had to come up with one. First of all, we ordered to stop and cool down reactor number 3. Reactors number 1 and 2 continued to work, even though the insides of their building had high enough levels of radiation, up to tens and locally even hundreds millirongens per hour. The building got contaminated because the intake air ventilation was not immediately turned off, and the contaminated air from the outside got into the building. People were still working in that building. On the order of Alexander Grigorievich Meshkov, the team of first responders had to cool down reactors number 1 and 2. This order was given by Meshkov, not by the plant administration and not by the Ministry of Energy officials. This order was immediately carried out. Boris Yevdokimovich Urbina immediately called for chemical troops, who promptly arrived under the command of Colonel Pikalov, as well as for a helicopter squadron, which was stationed in a nearby town of Chernikov. The squadron was led by Colonel Antoshkin, who was the executive officer of the local Air Force branch. They started overflights to assess the outside condition of the reactor number 4. It only took one overflight to realize the reactor was completely demolished. The upper plate, codenamed Yelena, which kept the reactor room airtight, was almost vertical, at a slight angle, and it was visibly cut open. Only a considerable load could do that. It meant the upper part of the reactor room was totally demolished. Pieces of graphite stacks, both whole and fractured, were spread across the turbine island roof and the ground. Large debris of fuel elements were seen. Judging by the condition, by the fracture patterns, I could see there had been a fuel air explosion. Having had experience from other jobs, I could estimate the equivalent yield of the explosion to be 3 to 4 TNT tons. The reactor aperture was pouring with a 100-meter-long white belch of combustion products, apparently coming from graphite. Inside the reactor room, large spots of bright crimson glow could be seen. It was hard to say whether the glow was coming from the red-hot graphite stacks that were kept in their place because the graphite was burning uniformly, producing usual chemical exhaust. The light we saw reflected at the sky was the glow coming from the red-hot graphite. The graphite stacks were that bright. We quickly determined the radiation power at different points along the vertical and horizontal planes. We realized that a lot of radiation escaped the reactor room number 4, but the first question was whether the reactor, or part of it, was still working, whether it continued to produce short-lived radioactive isotopes. We had to determine it, certainly and quickly, so the armored carriers from the chemical troops units went forward. They mounted sensors to measure gamma radiation and neutron emission. The first data from the neutron detectors allegedly showed high levels of neutron emission. That would mean the reactor was still working. To figure it out, I had to approach the reactor myself in an armored carrier. I realized the neutron detectors were giving a false positive due to the strong gamma radiation levels we had there. The most precise information of the reactor condition was obtained from the ratio of short-lived and long-lived isotopes, iodine-134 and iodine-131. Radiochemical measurements proved that there was no influx of short-lived iodine isotopes, and hence the reactor was not working. It was in a subcritical state. Within the next few days, repeated analysis of volatile compounds found no influx of short-lived isotopes. This was the main evidence of the remaining fuel being in a subcritical state after the reactor had been demolished.